The court system is slow, that it dragged on until I was pregnant with my son. And so I had to drive around with whiskey plates and my newborn in the back seat blowing into this thing, trying not to wake him up. And I'm like, oh my God.
Welcome to another real, raw, and authentic episode of Sober.Buzz, spreading the good buzz, hosted by me, Josh Case, and my beautiful fiance, Heidi Case.
Hi, that's me.
Our global community crosses cultures and has no international borders, as addiction and recovery is a human journey. Hope is found here.
Yes, it is.
So today we have an exciting guest, Jen Hurst, a sober coach from Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah, so she's got that Canadian Minnesota accent.
Don't you know?
Sometimes I have that accent pop out. I'm like, dang it, stop.
So she's founder of Lighthouse Sobriety. Her sober date's April 24th, 2013. So 12 years. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, that's awesome.
So married, mom of two kids.
Yes.
And you're focused on building healthy habits and sobriety from day one once you get sober, right? That's kind of your...
Yeah. And I was actually just talking with a client before this call because she's experiencing this dip. And so I'm like, I should do a post about that because a lot of the habits that are in my program. So I'm a sober coach. I know he was kind of getting into my intro, but because you had mentioned it, is that once we get sober is because, of course, alcohol gives us this huge dopamine spike, but wherever there's a peak, there's a crash. So especially in that first week, 2 weeks, even 30 days, maybe even 60 days, you experience like a dip and you go lower than you originally were from the get-go. And so you might feel low, you might feel sad, you might have the brain fog and all of those things. Of course, you're going to be super tired. Right. But these habits that I started in my programs really help you to feel better faster when you're in the dip. And of course, above and beyond, way past the dip to help you to boost that dopamine naturally.
So as a sober coach, tell me, what are the types of things you're coaching people doing? Like what's your sort of your go-to of what you do?
Yeah, because when, like we were talking before this, we've all been to treatment. And so I loved treatment, but I created what I would have wanted 12, 13, even 14 years ago of what would I want to know before I got sober? And also, can someone hold my hand through those first few days, that first week? This is what you're going to experience here. You might experience this here, but also how to live life in sobriety. Because I didn't get that. I don't know if you guys got that in treatment. I didn't get that in treatment of these really day-to-day things of what do I say to my friends? Like back then, I was 31 or 29 when I got sober. What do I say to my friends that now that I'm not drinking? Because that's all we did together. What is a boundary? What do I take with me? Oh, what are some things that I always preach, like carrying a cooler? We go through stress management techniques, how water is important to your sobriety, like all of these different things, these day-to-day things that you'll go through. And especially with my fall program coming up, how do you stay sober through the holidays? How do you manage family dynamics of your mother or people drinking around you, right? So it's just these day-to-day things that come up, especially in that early sobriety. And I really like to think early sobriety is like a whole year. Like we can sometimes think about it as 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, which yes, that's initially early sobriety, but it really
lasts a long time.
Yes. And there's so many things that that you experience in that first year. Like every single season, every single holiday is going to bring with its own sets of challenges and its own set of excitement that you can look forward to. And so instead of biting off everything all at once and freaking yourself out, it's like, let's just take this one thing at a time, one season, one holiday. This is how we're going to get through it and going through the trigger hour. And so again, I just, over the course of the years that I've put this out, I've just kept refining it. This is what I feel like they would like to know at this point. Managing emotions is week two.
Oh, yeah.
How do you not numb out or go and react when something sets you off? How do you feel sadness feel anxiety without wanting to numb it. I mean, that's the whole basis, is we're trying to escape what we feel. We want to change how we feel. So how do we become okay with it? With simple stuff.
Right?
So yeah, I guess that's in a nutshell. But what I like to do is I like to do it all together, because I think there's so much power in community. And so we have a start date, we have trackers, because I think when you have visual proof of all these things that you get to do and that you have on tap for that day, that's going to help boost your confidence. And what we track are the habits. Did you stay sober that day? And we do that together. I put women virtually. How can I create that sense of community that we can get in person, on, so that we can get to know each other and have that bond throughout this program? So women develop friendships, they've developed and created best friends, they get together, all of those different things. And it's so cool because you never have to leave your house if you don't want. So the community aspect, the trackers, coaching, all of that.
So before you guys hijacked the intro, I have one.
Sorry. No, sorry. I'm like, no, let me just tell it all.
It's fine, because this is a podcast. Nathan can put everything in whatever order it needs to be. But I have a controversial question for you, and it's probably going to divide our audience. I mean, at least the audience is that's in their late 30s and up. So you're a lover of the TV show Friends.
Yes.
Where do you fall on the break? Were Ross or Rachel?
Were they on a break?
Were they on a break or not?
Oh,
now,
gosh.
Yeah.
I hate that episode.
Well, I know you do. You've mentioned that.
Okay, yes, they were on a break. She even said that. They were on a break.
It was clear.
However, he should have done that. But he was drinking, right? Drinking makes us do stupid stuff.
There you go. All been tied together.
Wouldn't have done it if he would have been, drinking. See? It messed it all up.
It did.
So they were on a break. But he's still wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. They were on a break. But yeah, I would be pissed if my ex-boyfriend or whatever, the day after or the day of, went and of course, but he was drinking. Not that that's an excuse.
True.
But he wasn't thinking in his right mind.
That's right.
Very true.
I wouldn't have never driven drunk. If I would, you know, of course not in my right mind or like thinking that would be a great solution. No. However, yeah, it's my responsibility. It was my choice to drink. And in turn, it takes off my control center. I'm not thinking clearly. So I think I'm totally okay. No, I'm not. And so makes us do stupid crap, get consequences, all of those things.
So with that, so did you, get a DUI, and was that kind of your wake-up call, or?
I wish it was. I've gotten two.
Okay.
So, yeah, the first was in 2005, classic New Year's Day. And I think
they're
that'd
out
be
there looking for you, right?
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, here I am, guys. Yeah. Best day of the year, right? That was a wake-up call, but I still had, you know, I have to look down, like, have to do the math. 8 years of drinking left in me. And my second one was, there's something about holidays, was February 14th, 2013. So I was getting at the very end of my drinking, and I was in really tough shape. And that one was way more severe. I blew over a 0.2. I blew a 0.23. It was during rush hour. I was in a blackout. I had open bottles in my car. So a lot more consequences where I got my car taken away, had to get my license back, day in jail.
Did you get the thing where you have to like blow in it in order for your car to start?
Yeah. 2 years. And because the court system is slow, that it dragged on until I was pregnant with my son. And so I had to drive around with whiskey plates and my newborn in the back seat blowing into this thing, trying not to wake him up. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But again.
Because I had one when I got out of the syrup where you blow in it. I had to blow in it every day, and it wasn't in the car. It was just, it went into my sober coach, and it's loud.
Yes, it is like freaking alarm.
It was loud.
And then it takes your picture, too.
Yeah, exactly. And
And trying to like hide that at my job, I would park in the back and I'd like, you know, and I'd go like this where it's still, they could still see me. And I'm
wondering what you're doing down there.
I know. And it's incredibly humbling, but just the responsibility I had to take to get my life back. And so when that came off 2 years into my sobriety, it was the last thing that I had to clean up. And it felt so freaking good to get that off. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, that's probably how you felt when your expungement went through, right? Just a weight.
Yeah, just kind of a weight off your chest. Yeah. I had some legal issues that went down toward the end of my unravel. And once they were all expunged, it was like, oh God, okay. Ooh, now I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Luckily, I didn't have to wait years for my charges to be dropped. It was a week. It was like months. But that was a relief too, so.
Yeah. And sometimes we can look at that and can, you know, make us feel so sad or overwhelm us of, oh my gosh, I have to do this. But I had so much stuff to clean up from my drinking that if I would have thought of everything, I would have freaked out. But, and this is what I tell people, if they've created a mess from the tornado that their drinking created, is that, again, it's just, I'm going to do this one thing at a time. Okay, I don't have a car, so I'm going to get a job at a local printing shop. I'm going to bike there. I have to get somewhere close so I can bike there. And I'm just going to, it's like what they say is like clean up your side of the street. Yep. Is you just try to make things right. And it's not something that happens overnight. Like I said, it took 2 years. It actually took 2 years for my husband to be able to trust me again. You know, it just doesn't happen quickly. I think many things started, like many good things started to happen in my life, like so many amazing things. But also it just took a while for me to, okay, this. Okay, now I have to go on house arrest. Okay, now I have to have a conversation with my employer about why I can't come into work.
Right.
So it's just, all right, let's do this. I'm not going to die. Okay, now let's do this. And it was just, yeah, incredibly humbling.
I can see why someone would want a sober coach to hold their hand through steps like that, because I'm sure a lot of shame and stuff comes up around that too. Like
scary too.
Yeah, and scary. Yeah, like here I am, I'm sober and I'm still dealing with this. Like I have to go tell my employer I'm on house arrest now. Like
how are they going to react?
Well, and that's the thing is, you feel so alone. And I've had clients and that have gotten DWIs or multiple DWIs. And you can feel like, again, that all that shame, but it's like what I would have wanted to someone to tell me. And actually, I just heard it again the other day is, hey, everything's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're not going to die from this. In fact, just trust the, I don't know if it's trust the process or just accept acceptance that this is your thing. And the only way to get through is just do it.
Yeah, right? That radical acceptance is such a huge, huge part of recovery, especially afterward of like, yep, I've just got to accept where I am. I made a really big fucking mess and now I've got to clean it up and this really sucks. And here I am, but I'm sober and that makes it better because at least I'm not drunk trying to deal with this.
Right.
Or at least I'm not high trying to deal with this. You make
better decisions at least.
At least my face is not down in my food and Josh is trying to feed me in front of his children while I'm trying to do this.
Like, and my ex-wife.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Nathan, you may want to cut down.
Well, that's what I kept saying. And I remember in detox when I was there for the second time is as long as I don't drink, I can't make this any worse. Like I am so freaking low. As long as I don't drink, I cannot go lower than this.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
And that's just what kind of motivated me. I'm like, I didn't know what even was going to happen because by the end of my drinking, I almost died. I had no money. I had no job. My husband was on the verge of divorce. My parents didn't know what to do with me. I was homeless. And like, I don't know what's going to happen. But again, as long as I don't drink, I can't make this any worse. And so I just let go. I'm like, I don't know if me and my husband are going to make it. I don't know about this. But all I know is that not drinking is the best thing that I can do right now. And my gosh, what can change when you don't drink is that I got a job, you know, at a local printing shop. I got a job back in my field. I got pregnant within 4 months. You know, it was just freaking amazing. And so that kind of just gave me the motivation to, holy smokes. Oh my gosh. And by that point, I didn't even want to drink anymore. I was so done with it. Right. And it was like, I finally woke up. And I don't know if you two had similar experiences, but.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was for me. Yeah. That sure. Where it was just like, why am I doing this anymore? And then it was just like, I just didn't. Yeah.
You just lose the desire. It become. Yeah. It's funny how all of a sudden it's just gone.
You mentioned your husband. I've read a little bit about him. He's been on some podcasts. It sounds like he is a normie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, how does that, does he drink once in a while, or is he sober too with you? How do you guys navigate that?
Yeah, it's so crazy because we just had a conversation last night because we were actually alone for the first time years. But he, again, he's normal. He can take it or leave it, but he likes the taste of beer. And so sometimes he would try a non-alcoholic beer, but he'd always have his outings with his buddies like a couple times a year. And I always left that, you do whatever you want to do. Just don't bring it into the house, right? Or don't come home drunk. Like you can have a beer even in the house, just keep it in the garage, whatever. As long as you don't drink and you're not drunk around me, should I say, he can drink around me, just don't get drunk around me. And he never really has. There's only been a couple instances. You go do you. But I expect you to be here at 8 a.m. the next day. Kids wanting you or your attention, right, you're right. Not going to take a nap or anything.
Expect you to be on full 100% parent.
Yes. Over. And then all of a sudden, after in November, he decided to go alcohol free. And there was kind of like an incident that it wasn't major or serious. And all of a sudden, he just stopped drinking. And I didn't ask him. He just said, hey, I'm like 30 days. I mean, he wasn't really even keeping track. I'm like, no way. That's awesome. And I over the 11 years, I never said you have to stop drinking. Only in the first 60 days, I wanted his support. So yeah. If he can take or leave it, could you leave it for 60 days to support me? Because it'd just be a lot easier, even though I didn't want it. And so I did. Didn't bother. He's like, no problem. I'll just have like a doctor prepper or something. I don't really care. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what that is. So we had a discussion yesterday. Yeah, I'm like, you can just go to a concert and have a
soda.
You
put something in the Dr. Pepper?
Like, that doesn't make you feel weird. He's like, no. I'm like, God, that's, yeah. So he's been alcohol-free since November, and he loves Athletic Brewing. That has just paved the way for him. He loves it. He'll have like one or two over camping. He just bought a case of Athletic Brewing, had that. He'll do like hot water, things like that. And it doesn't bother him. And he said, he's talking to a buddy. He's like, yeah, I actually don't drink, when they're thinking about fantasy football and all of those things, that he just doesn't really care to stay up late anymore. He doesn't want to have the headaches. He doesn't like the way alcohol makes him feel anymore. And he said to me last night, he doesn't know if this is a forever thing, but for right now he isn't. And I think take forever off the table. And it's, I think, one of the most attractive things in a relationship. Absolutely. I'm not going to pressure you, but the only thing that you can do is be the example. You can let them have their own journey, even if they have a problem or not.
Right.
And show them this is what sobriety looks and feels like. Right. I don't think a hangover is worth it.
Yeah.
Well, I know I know you have like really specific steps that you go through on a daily basis. Will you run us through those? Like, are those part of maybe what showed him like, wow, she is looking and feeling so good. Maybe I should do these things too.
Or, like, you do a walk or something?
Yeah.
Like a whole process.
Yeah,
right?
You have like a whole huge process. Yeah. It looks awesome. Tell us about it.
And it kind of changes all the time. And so a lot of the habits that I talk about are incorporated into that. And I started doing it, and I started this whole like morning routine thing back in 2017 when I started reading personal development and Tony Robbins and all of these people were talking about this 5 a.m. hour. And I'm like, what?
That's not an hour I get up at.
No, and I thought it was crazy. And I'm like, I wonder
I've tried to get her up. It doesn't go well.
If I could sleep till 7, that would be like a Christmas miracle. My body is so in tune and so on routine right now that I wake up at naturally around 5 right now.
Change your routine.
No, thanks. I'm good.
But I think it's so imperative if you have kids, if whatever, is to wake up earlier than you usually do to have that time for yourself. And yeah. I was a new mom. My kids were like 1 and 3. And you don't have a lot of time for yourself. So I took my workouts at home, but that's just evolved over the years as my mornings are my me time. Like we usually save that for 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock. I switch that and I do it first thing. And I fill, it sounds so cliche, but I fill my cup first thing. I do the things that I want to do. So then by the time my kids get up, I've already done all of these things that boost my dopamine, that make me feel good. And then these 10-minute walks, these now it's like 20-minute walks. It sounds so stupid. I saw all these.
I always feel better after all.
Yeah, I did them at Hazelden. I did them at my inpatient treatment. And then I just stopped doing it. But then I've, again, through all the research, especially with hormones and stress and nervous system regulation, one of the best things that you can do in sobriety in your entire life is to get outside and go for a walk. It is so simple. And it's, I like, and I know it, you're like, shut up.
No, not at all.
Actually, we like to go on walks every morning.
We've had the same conversation, how the day is just better.
Yeah.
You know, even if we don't want to go, we're happy after, right?
It's like going to an AA meeting.
You don't want to go, but afterwards you're glad you went, you know?
Yeah.
So. Yes. You always feel better after. I don't think anyone's ever been on a walk. Well, like that sucked. Unless it was like -40 and you were like freezing your ass off.
Well, you're in Minnesota, so maybe.
Yeah, and I do, and I gear up. It's like, it's that saying, it's like, there's no bad weather, there's just bad clothing. Is how you approach the weather is how you approach life for getting out for a walk. If it's snowing, you're like, conditions aren't perfect. I'm not going to do it. Life isn't perfect. Gear up, get the gear.
I
get
my perspective.
It's like, it's how you approach it. It's like, it's raining. Well, tough shit. Get out and go for a walk and enjoy it. Get an umbrella. Get a rain jacket.
Get your raincoat.
Yeah.
Get your little watches.
It's remember just, I've noticed.
We were like 2 blocks that one day.
Yes.
Well, but again, even in those harder, it's like usually the ones that are harder or like the rain, the snow, the wind, all of that stuff are like the most rewarding because it's hard and you're pushing past that discomfort to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Yeah. So I've just noticed a huge difference in sleep, in mood, and like just hormones, all of that with walking. And so whether it's 10 minutes and you don't have a lot of time or it's 20 minutes or you can get out for a half hour, fantastic. So if there's anything, and I know you guys also see the benefits that you take away, is don't underestimate the power of a walk if you want to get through a craving, if you're going through something hard, or even if you're celebrating something. It has been freaking life-changing for me.
Question, this caught my eye, and you asked me too, what is an NLP practitioner?
NLP. I should even know what it stands for. Was it like neuro-linguistic? I should even know. It's like one of the trainings
I got. You're certified in it, right?
I know. I'm certified in it. It's NLP practitioner. It's one of like the 5 certifications I got. I don't even know, to be quite honest, exactly what it stands for, but it's something great. But that's the thing. It's like, so I coached before I even had certifications. And so when I just launched like Lighthouse Academy, the women already graduated, but it's not a certification program. And so this might like ruffle feathers too, but I don't feel like I need a certification to prove my worth. Is that my worth?
Yeah, and your experiences, right?
Yeah, is I've had 12 years of sobriety and it's very eclectic. I've done a bunch of different things, treatment, DWIs, all of that stuff. And there's something that I'm doing that's working and taking care of myself. And so I think your qualification is in your experience, is in your journey and your motivation and desire to help other people to get sober and stay sober. And I think certifications are great, but you don't need that to start helping other people. You
I was going to say, that's kind of why we do this, because like what works for me may not work for you. And we're giving people a breadth of different people's experiences, and hopefully something will work for somebody, right?
And by no means are we certified in anything.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, everyone.
Well, you're not certified. I did have my Series 7 and 66 licenses until I let them expire.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's
true. Well, and that's just the whole thing is that, again, I just think it's different for sobriety, is that someone who hasn't been through drinking or like addiction or whatever your issue is not going to help you relate to you and help you in that process compared to someone who has. That's just my personal opinion. And so that's kind of what my program is about. I'm like, I'm not going to give you a certification. I didn't have one. I'll give you a piece of paper, but I'm going to show you how to help other women, how I help other women. And it has been through my experience and my desire to always be a student. I listen to a bunch of podcasts, you know, like your own, and books and all of that stuff. And I've just consumed and got clarity on so many different things. And I also adjusted in the 12 years of what used to work, what works now, and how I can then take what I've learned and apply that to my clients.
How many people have women have graduated through your program?
And gosh, how long I wish have you been I knew. It? I wish I knew. I should have the numbers on that. I'm not very good with numbers. So every single program is about 75 to 100 women. I've probably ran probably 12. And then there's about 200 women in my membership as well.
And these women probably, they correspond with each other and, or yeah. So it's like a community, yeah. Right?
Yes. And so the membership is a community, but then I also create that sense in my programs as well. We have Marco Polo groups. There's 2 weekly meetings. There's constant engagement in our groups. And so those women, the ones who choose to engage, because I can give you all the tools, but if you choose to not use them, you're not going to get as much out of it. So the women who choose to engage and like participate on the calls and get in the Marco Polo groups get the most bang for the buck. Then they get to meet and connect with the other women, which is like the whole magic is connection. Like Johan Hari says, the opposite of addiction is connection.
It's connection.
Yes. And they meet these and develop these friends and best friends. And I've even had women who join my programs who live a block or two away from each other. It's crazy.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah. And so when we get together, we already know each other because we've been talking to each other online for so long that when we get together, it's just like old friends. Yeah. Super easy. Yeah. And I think what's best about sobriety too, sorry, and then I'll shut up, is that before you even say something, I already know why you're there and probably your deepest, darkest secret that a lot of people don't even know. And I think because we're so vulnerable from the get-go, that opens the invitation to develop deeper connections that much faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got just a couple minutes left. Is there anything else that you would leave us with? Any tips, words of advice? Anything you want to let the listeners know?
And we're going to put all your information
down below
and on our Instagram and YouTube and all that. So,
yeah, I guess just the whole key to sobriety is discomfort. That's the ability to feel uncomfortable and not run from it. And so one thing I say to myself, anytime I feel nervous or anything, any emotion that comes up, or even with my kids, they say this all the time is, I'm not going to die. You know, before doing this podcast or doing this or going to that event and you feel that anticipation anxiety, I'm not going to die. And often I would drink before events because I was so nervous. So, hey, is this thing literally going to kill me? Yeah. And so just I think the ability in different ways to feel discomfort, whether it's going outside in the rain when you don't want to and going for a walk or taking a cold shower to practice discomfort. So when you do feel that, you're going to be better able and more equipped to handle it because you're constantly putting yourself in these experiences where you want to run, where you want to get out. And instead you stay in it, you breathe. Like the power of a box breath has literally changed my life.
Box breathing. And
gosh, I use it all the time. And it's again, so simple. Go for a walk, take a deep breath. But they are life changing. But again, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. And that is the whole key to sobriety. It's not running from it.
I gotta agree. So I got one last question for you. You're from Minnesota, so Juicy Lucy's are pretty popular there.
Oh yeah, right? Matt's. Yeah.
Is that your go-to?
Not anymore, no. I've tried it, but my stomach doesn't like greasy food. I do love a good burger, but I've changed my eating a lot, especially this past year. But it is a hot place in Minneapolis is Matt's Bar, where you get like the Juicy Lucy, where if you don't know what it is,
yeah,
it's like
them.
A burger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a burger patty. It's a huge burger patty. And what they do is they pump the cheese into the middle. So it's super hot. So you can't take big bites of it. You have to like slowly take these bites. Yeah, just one bite at a time, right?
Your mouth as you bite into it.
That sounds great.
So good.
Yeah. But it's just this hole in the wall, right? That's what I used to love to drink at is like, I didn't like big bars or anything. I like hole in the wall bars, little small joints, places like that. But yeah, if you're ever in Minneapolis, it's like an Ike. I think Barack Obama even went there too.
Oh, he's been on diners, drive-ins and dives and stuff like that too. So it's people know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So hit that up if you're in Minneapolis.
Looks like we'll have to come visit.
All right. Definitely. There you go.
Now, spackle is also popular there, isn't it? That the pork stuff that all the pork parts.
The what?
The big ground up, isn't it called spackle? They ground all the leftover parts of the pig and it looks like Spam. Yep.
I haven't heard of it, but there is a Spam museum in Austin, Minnesota. If you ever want to, I remember I went there and I was so hungover. And I wanted to Ralph the entire time just because we thought it was cool. I've never tried Spam, but
when it's hot and it's actually pretty good.
Oh, that's like the face that I get when I think about alcohol. Like, oh,
yeah.
Or like,
yeah, the bile on the back of your throat. The woof.
Well, with that, we want to thank everybody around the globe for joining us today with Jen Hurst, founder of Lighthouse Sobriety, and lives in Minnesota, loves a Juicy Lucy, doesn't eat Spam. So everybody, take care. Stay safe and sober out there in the wild. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.